Hey, it's Brian. If you've been considering getting your master's, you must consider the University of San Francisco's Sports Management Master's Program. They've been educating industry professionals for 30 years. They have a network of 2,500 alumni who are leaders in the industry and mentors to you. In this program, you'll gain over 1,000 hours of internship experience, which is super important. You need to get that experience out there. Start building your network and your experience and your skills. You'll learn from industry experienced faculty, and you can earn your master's in 23 months. It's the fast track to the career you've always wanted. For more information, go to the University of San Francisco's Sports Management Master's Program website at usfca.edu/SM. One more time, usfca.edu/SM. And the Work in Sports podcast is brought to you by the Work in Sports Academy. Four different online courses designed to make you the best possible candidate for sports jobs. Just going to class and getting good grades is not enough to work in the sports industry. We're going to teach you all the extra strategies and tactics you need to start implementing now if you really want to make your mark in the sports industry. Check it out, workinsports.com/academy. All right, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning at WorkInSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports podcast. For 20 years, the Cleveland Browns have been a miserable franchise. Sorry, I know that is harsh, but I think you'll find it difficult to argue with me. Through the last 19 seasons, the Cleveland Browns have amassed 88 wins. Total, 19 seasons, 88 wins. Do the math. That's an average of 4.6 per season. Are you serious? That's an average of a 4-12 season over 19 years? 29 quarterbacks have come and gone since 1999. The last winning season, 2007. What is remarkable is how stalwart the fans of Cleveland are through it all. Hugh Jackson won one game over 2 years as head coach, but the fans still came. They still cheered. They still believed and hoped and bought jerseys. Sure, I mean, some of that goes to the overall power of the NFL and the rules of scarcity. I mean, there are only so many games on the calendar. It's not like baseball or other sports with a plethora of opportunity to attend. If you're a fan of your team, you got 8 shots at it. That matter. We're not talking preseason. But most of it goes to a really, really good fan base. They're the ones that deserve the credit. And now, even despite a rocky start to the 2019 season, the Browns are the team everyone wants to talk about. Talk about change. Never thought since 1999 that we'd reach a point where the Browns would be this relevant. Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham, Myles Garrett, they have stars to market, potential to reap, and hope to sell. But that does not mean the job of today's guest, Mike Judge, manager of ticket sales for the Cleveland Browns, gets any easier. There's still much work to do to sell the experience of game day to a fan base that may still have some doubts. Here's Mike Judge. Hi, Mike. How's it going today?
Doing real well. How are you, Brian?
I am great. Before I started this interview, I checked on our site, and of the 7,000 active jobs we currently have posted in the work on workinsports.com, a little over 3,200 have the word sales in them. And now, while I'm no math whiz, that's around 48 to 50% of the available sports jobs. As a recruiter for sales jobs with the Browns, do you feel there's enough emphasis on sales and business principles in today's college curriculum? Are students really prepared for the reality of the sports industry that most of the jobs are in sales?
You know, it's really interesting, and it's a great question, Brian, because you're right. You know, it seems like more than you said 48%, and trust me, I am no math whiz either, so I'm not going to go numbers with you. But, you know, it's one of those things where a lot of jobs, more than half probably, are sales jobs, right?
Yeah.
And you look at it and you're like, okay, where are we at in terms of the curriculum? What's going on, you know, in the classroom? How are we preparing people for this when you're, you know, looking for those internships or those first opportunities out of school? And I think we've done a better job. And I can tell you this much, you know, where we're at right now, there seems to be, especially in, you know, the sports management programs, a lot of the people that I've gotten to meet throughout the country, they're taking a pretty strong focus on the sports sales side and teaching that and letting their students know. Obviously, there's a lot of jobs out there that aren't in sales as well, but let's face it, the majority are in sales here in sports. So we need to continue to make sure that's an emphasis, that people know that there are opportunities to get in the industry. It's in sales. It's a lot of fun, but, you know, want to make sure that the career path is clear as well and exactly what we're doing.
It's true. You know, I talk about this a lot in that almost every boss that I had, and I worked in the sports media, almost every boss I had had a background in sales. And it's because of that connection to generating revenue. So I think sometimes people think, all right, if I get into a sales job, I'll be in sales my entire life. Well, I think it can actually pivot into a lot of other realms within the industry too. And it's just a really good spot to start out. But I think that also brings up a big question. People get confused. I get this question a lot. People get confused by all the options in sales jobs. I look at our site and I see jobs in inside sales, group sales, premium sales, sponsorship sales, account executive jobs. Can you briefly explain the different types of roles and like where someone would start and what kind of what their career path might look like?
Yeah, absolutely. And I can understand the confusion because everybody's just seeing sales jobs and like, where do I fit? How did this start?
Exactly.
You know, where do I go from here? So I'll explain kind of how we do it here with the Browns, and that'll give you some insight. I would tell you that a lot of teams are set up similar.
Okay. Good.
And again, I don't want to speak for all the other teams, but it's a pretty easy process in the fact that most of the time, everybody starts out in inside sales.
Okay.
And some teams call it some different things, but inside sales is really laying the foundation for your sports sales career. Traditionally, it could be anywhere from like a 9, 12, 18-month type of program. At the Browns, it's a 9-month program. And what it, like I said, what's really designed to do is lay that foundation, get the understanding, the ins and outs, the training of what we do, okay, on a daily basis. It gives you the chance to not only know about our product, but really how to connect with the consumer, how to connect with businesses, and learn how to help them achieve organizational goals, or, you know, a friends and family day out at the stadium, things along those lines.
Okay.
And throughout those 9 months, especially at the Browns, we focus not only on training for the first few weeks, but really it's consistently throughout the program. We're doing different weekly one-on-ones. We're doing team meetings, team trainings, not only, like I said at the beginning, but really throughout the entire time while in inside sales. Now you're like, okay, inside sales, you know, this is, you know, a certain type of program. What's next? And that's really where, Brian, you see these opportunities open up in group sales or premium sales. Premium sales is usually a little bit further down the line.
Okay.
But maybe an account executive or a membership services role that's focusing on a current season ticket base. So what you'll see there is after inside sales, you'll see a lot of reps take their next steps into a full-time role in the account executive, the group sales, the membership services role. And then from there, they're continuing to be trained, but at the same time, they've got that full-time role. What we do here at the Browns, if we don't have a position available, and hopefully, you know, we do, but if we don't, we're fortunate enough to have a lot of friends across the industry
right.
that, you know, they're always looking for, hey, who's your next group sales or your next membership services rep? So that's really the next step is usually into one of those three types of positions. After that, then you'll see some folks get into the premium sales or the corporate sales world after a little bit more experience, probably 2-3 years worth of experience in that next role. That's where you'll see them make those next moves into the premium or the corporate sales world.
So what percentage would you guess, and I'm not going to hold you to the math, but what percentage would you kind of guess people that get into the inside sales program, do it for your 9-month period, and then continue on to the next phase with the Browns or with another team? Are these, are you finding that there are a lot of people that either weed themselves out or you guys weed them out because they're not good enough? How does it kind of play out after that first 9 months?
Well, first of all, Brian, now that this is becoming a math podcast and not a sports podcast, I'm getting real nervous.
Exactly. I got my calculator.
All right. Fair. So here's what I'll tell you. And again, I'm only familiar with our situation. I don't want to speak with other people
right.
but about what other people do and such. But I think that our situation, you know, we're looking primarily for people that want to sell. We're really fortunate that we get to sell sports and something that's fun and brings people together. But at the same time, I'm very, very, very particular in terms of I need people that want to sell. Because at the end of the day, an inside sales job is a sales job, right? We're just lucky, like I said, that it's in sports. So out of the last 18 individuals that have gone through our inside sales program, 17 of them have ended up getting a full-time job in sports, whether that's been at the Browns or with another organization.
Wow, that's a good math.
We're really proud of.
Yeah, I don't need a calculator for that. That's good.
Knock on wood, it's been a lot of fun to kind of see that happen and play out. And even before then, we've had a pretty high placement rate in regards to next steps in sports, sales jobs, things along those lines. So it's one of those things where the way I look at it is, with looking for people that want to sell, we have less of a weeding out period or people just falling off because they know what they're getting themselves into. My job is to explain what you're getting yourself into, because I don't want you showing up on day three and being like, oh my gosh, what is this? You know, what am I doing here? So I think because of the situation and the way we've laid it out over the last 5 years, that our inside sales program has been in place here with the Browns. That's why we've had that high success rate of people taking those next steps in sports, in sales, whether that's been here with the Browns or, like I said, with another organization.
So that's interesting. So if these are 9-month programs and you're a recruiter for it, then you're constantly on the look for the next wave of people. I would think you're at career fairs. You mentioned that you're out there looking for the next talented people to come in and backfill into your program. When you're out there, obviously you're looking for people, like you said, that want to sell, but what are you looking for? How are you able to identify that? How are you able to come up with that surefire, this, I can tell this person has the right skills, has the right attitude. What are you looking for?
Well, you know, that's a great question there, Brian, because if you think about it, you know, there's a lot of people who could just come into it and say, hey, I want to sell. And then, you know, we're like, oh, you want to sell? That's great.
Right.
So what I'm looking for really though is, first of all, energy and attitude. I think especially in a sales role, I'm going to tell you that I think in any role that you have, whether it's in sports or some other organization outside of sports, what you bring to the table day in and day out, having that energy, having a great attitude is going to be something that's going to push you forward, right? We need that, especially in our roles in sales, because let's face it, there's lots of ups and downs, twists and turns.
Yeah.
So you're kind of going through this and then you're like, what else kind of stands out? So maybe it's a student that has taken some different sales courses in their college career. Maybe it's a student that has some sales experience. And you know what? I am totally fine. I don't care if that sales experience comes from a shoe store, working at a Target, whatever it may be.
Yep.
Having opportunities to get customer facing, working at the local Pizza Hut or whatever, you know, getting customer facing, that's huge to me. So, and then being able to share some of those stories or experiences, that really stands out a lot as well. And I think that whether that's an internship as well that maybe you got while you were in college that had a focus on sales, that'd be very strong also. But it could be a number of different things. But wanting to sell and at least wanting to get out there and put yourself in front of a crowd or put yourself in front of people, that also is going to be something that stands out.
Yeah, I think the energy and attitude, like you said, is such a vital part of, I mean, any job, but especially in sales. And I would think that just the ability to be a relationship person, you know, like that ability to connect with people, I think would be so valuable in the roles you're talking about. So let's say I graduate college, I have the skills and the energy and the attitude that you want to see, and you hire me to work in inside sales. What does my day-to-day kind of look like? What's my world going to be?
Well, you know, the beauty of working in sports is we have an idea of what it is, but you never know what's going to happen day in, day out.
Right? Yeah, so true.
Yep. I mean, a few weeks ago here in Cleveland, we made a couple trades late on a Friday afternoon. None of our reps complained at all. We were hanging out here till 9-10 o'clock at night because people were just really excited about the direction of the team. And then, you know, we come in Saturday and Sunday and we're working almost normal days, which, let's face it, nobody complained because it was fun. We were here and it was rolling. So you never really know. But a traditional Monday through Friday type scenario, Brian, you know, what I look for is we're 8:30 to 5:30. So normal business hours. We do have reps who come in a little early, stay a little bit later, those things. But primarily, you know, like I said, Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30. And then what I'm looking for is, in inside sales, it's all about repetition. It's all about getting that practice. So our inside sales reps are expected to make about 100 outbound calls a day, along with setting 5 face-to-face meetings weekly. And the face-to-face meetings are really important because it gives us a chance to get in front of our prospects, learn more about them, they learn a little bit about us, and it makes it just for a better situation, a better, you know, really a better connection with that prospect and helping them achieve their needs. So for us, it boils down to those are kind of like non-negotiables, are the 100 outbound calls, the face-to-face meetings, 5 per week. Yeah. Those are really, really important to the success of our inside sales reps.
Makes total sense. So I get this question all the time, and I try to give it my best answer. But as a recruiter, you're probably better equipped to answer it than I am. If someone applies for a job with you, when and how is it appropriate to follow up? You know, you get that trap of like, I applied for this job and I didn't hear anything. What should I do now? Should somebody follow up with you? What's the kind of process that you like to get? Or should they even bother? If you don't respond, then they're just not the right candidate. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think that's a really interesting question on how do you respond to somebody after an interview.
Right.
I am probably one of the worst people to ask that question to because I'm open to any form of communication and how you feel is best and how you're comfortable with it. And, you know, I give out my cell phone number to people that I'm recruiting, you know, after interviews, all that kind of stuff. You know, I have some people who give me a phone call. I'll have some people text me. I'll have some people email me. I'll tell you what still stands out is a handwritten note. It'll stand the test of time. It's one of those things that if you send a handwritten note within a couple days after, I get all these digital messages, but, you know, it still stands out that you took the time to write something out and drop it in the mail. So I know it's old school, and maybe I'm just that type of person, but I think a couple days after dropping a handwritten note holds a lot of weight.
Mike, I cannot thank you enough for saying that. I seriously cannot thank you enough for saying that because I have preached that for a long time and I've had at least 4 other people on the podcast who've said the exact same thing. They're like, yeah, you can send me an email, but you know what? If you send me a handwritten note, it shows a little extra level of care. And I love that you echoed that. And I'll tell you, I think it's great that you're opening yourself up to being able to communicate in different channels. I mean, I think that's awesome. And I think you are the right person to ask. So I think that's a great answer. That people should follow up and how they can do it. But the handwritten card, I think it does make a difference. I know when I was hiring, I probably got 3 or 4 of them over my hundreds of interviews, and they all stood out.
Yep, it really does. And again, I understand in today's digital world that, you know, people are sending texts, people are phone calls, you know, all those types of things. But geez, you know, this morning I got 2 handwritten notes on my desk. I can tell you exactly who they were from, you know, what they were about, what they were in here for, all those types of things. That definitely, it's just like you said, it goes a little bit further.
Yeah. Yeah. So changing a little bit, I get frustrated because I give career advice to people all day long. It's my job. But I get frustrated when people seem uninterested in sports sales jobs. Sales jobs, for some reason, seem to have a negative connotation to many people. You speak in college classrooms. You're out there on the recruiting trail. You're at career fairs. How do you convince people that a job in sports sales is a great career?
Well, you know, I think it kind of goes back to one of the earlier questions. First of all, let's face it, most of the jobs that we're out there recruiting for, these teams, are in sales. So that's going to stand out right away. But I think sales overall, just having a conversation with an individual, and I'm very passionate about sales and what we do, is just giving them some insight and saying, hey, this is a really honorable profession, right? And this is a profession that no matter what, you're going to be able to take these skills with you for the rest of your life. And think about it. Even if you're going for a marketing job, even if you're going for a PR job, whatever it may be, you're still selling yourself, and then you're selling your idea. So that sales piece is always kind of there. Here's an opportunity to utilize your skill set and drive revenue for an organization, and for you to hit all these organizations, you know, be a part of these organizational revenue goals and be a part of a team and kind of all that goes along with it. I think it's one of those things when we're at career fairs, I haven't actually found it to be too difficult. I think just like along with the people that we're talking to, they kind of have an idea of what we do. But again, we're not the guys on the, you know, the slick back hair salespeople. You know, we're doing some really neat things, and it is a very honorable profession.
It definitely is. And it travels. I mean, you can work in sales someplace and there's going to be jobs like that everywhere. There's sales jobs everywhere across the country with different type of organizations inside and outside of sports. So once you get in there and you have that experience, you're very marketable. And like you said, that's an honorable career. We have this private Facebook group for fans of this podcast. And right now there are about 250 people in there. And these are like the elite. They're like super interested and engaged and getting into conversations and networking. And I love talking with that group. So before every interview, I ask them, I say, hey, what do you want me to ask? I've got this interview guest coming up. What do you want to know? And I always pick a few of the best to question in. So here goes. Matt Williamson messages in and says he wants to know what strategies you use to motivate your team when on-field performance isn't where you hope it would be. Obviously, the Browns have struggled some over the last couple of years. You've got some hope going now. You said things are getting exciting around there, but how do you handle that? How do you motivate your team when things might not be going perfectly out there on the field?
Well, I think, first of all, internally as salespeople, we're motivated to push through any situation that comes about, right?
Yeah.
And we understand that we don't control the wins and losses when you work for a sports team. It's the control what you can control piece. And what I can control is my activities, my appointments, my face-to-face opportunities with different individuals. So there's that piece there. I think that we're internally driven, right? But then, you know, there's different ways we can motivate. And really, you know, through the ups and downs, you know, there's fun contests that we put into play. There's different things that like, hey, let's go out for a wing night. You know what I mean? Like things like that, if we can hit these certain goals that people really get excited for. So, again, I think that there's that piece that we can utilize contests or different things. But salespeople overall generally are internally motivated. So yeah. They don't really care what's going on around them. We have a job to do, and we're going to do it to the best of our ability.
I think that's great. And I think you really struck on an important part there of company culture. I mean, there's so many companies that people talk about that are a good or a bad culture, and that can totally affect your day-to-day work life and enjoyment. And what you're talking about is a fun environment where you have contests and you have wing nights and you have other things going on to make it a very motivating environment. And that's a testament to you and your organization style. I would say my other question too was when I first started out and, you know, I'm working in the sports media, there's probably 200 other crazy sports fans like me in the newsroom all the time. And there's TVs everywhere. It's like there's TVs everywhere. We're watching sports. We're creating television. It was so much fun. It was just this great little environment. Is that what it's kind of like for you guys? Do you have kind of a close knit group where you just have this really cool environment in the office?
No doubt. And it's contagious, right? You know,
right.
You want to be a part of it. And you know, I hate to go back, but it's just a really recent event. You know, a few weeks ago when we kind of had that buzz going, we were making some different moves and such on the football side. Nobody wanted to not be a part of it, right? People were not upset about Friday night, you know, staying in the office because we were in it together and we were in it with our friends. You know, that's
yeah.
The cool thing about sports. And I look around at the people that I started inside sales with. A lot of them are still in the industry. Some of them are actually still with the Browns. And it's really neat because we're all still really close. We all still do things together. So I think, again, it goes back to, like you said, the culture. We're in a really unique spot where we've got great leadership and we've got a culture that's very, very unique and people want to be here doing things together and pushing forward and driving revenue and making sales.
So another question comes in from Casey DeHart. She asks, in your view, what are the key traits or characteristics that make someone successful in sports sales?
Geez, I'm going to sound like a broken record on this one, but I'm going to go back to the energy and attitude piece.
Yeah.
It's just so important because, you know, Brian, if we're not focusing or having that good, positive attitude, bringing the energy day in and day out, we're just not going to have the success that we should achieve. So those to me are like pillars of what we're doing, what we're looking for in inside sales reps. And that's what's going to make you successful is having that on a day-to-day basis. Consistently bring it in.
Yeah. And it sounds like you spend a lot of time training. And it sounds like so somebody that, like you said, if they're working in a different industry even, but they've had some sales experience, even if they get into your program, you can train them to do a lot of the techniques or whatever, I would imagine. But having the energy and the attitude is something that can't really be trained, right?
No doubt. No doubt. That's something that's internal with the individual. I can teach you how to sell. I can teach you different techniques. But at the end of the day, if you're not bringing that energy and attitude, that's something I can't teach. That's just a non-negotiable. That needs to be a part of your repertoire on a day in and day out basis.
Something I've always been curious about, you think of salespeople in the always be closing mentality, and they have the phone stuck to their ear. It's a little bit cliche, but you did mention that you have some requirements as far as weekly goals on phone calls and things like that. In today's world, has social media and other developing technologies changed the way you sell product, or is it still a face-to-face or voice-to-voice kind of an environment?
The way I look at it, and I think that's a really unique question, because let's face it, today, social media is everywhere. But I think that, first of all, there's still, going back even to the old school ways of handwriting a note, that face-to-face interaction is so unique and so important to what we do. That's really what we want to do, is get face-to-face with our customers. But at the same time, social media has given us an opportunity to connect with people on a daily basis, or a unique opportunity to get in contact with somebody. I can tell you, Brian, that when I was on the sales side for the first few years here at the Browns, I utilized Twitter, and I connected with a ton of our fans, a ton of different businesses on Twitter. And it gave me the opportunity to get to know these people a little bit better. And then we'd meet. We'd meet at the games. We'd meet down at First Energy Stadium, you name it.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
I don't think that we're going to ever replace the fact that the phone kind of has its role in our job. But at the same time, things like Twitter, LinkedIn, obviously emails, and whatever else is coming down the road in terms of social media, it will give us opportunities to get in contact with people and continue to establish and build those relationships.
So in your role, where you're managing a lot of people that are probably more entry level staff, and you're also having to, you're on the sales floor yourself, I would imagine, at some level, at some points, what are the kind of biggest challenges you face? Is it the management style, or is it something completely different?
Well, you know, I think it's one thing. The biggest challenges that we face is just it's just continuing to understand our client, right, and how they want to be communicated. I think it goes back to the last question. You know, some people prefer email, some people prefer phone. What's the best way to get in touch with people? Do they want a tweet? Do they want a LinkedIn message? So I think as our industry and really as society continues to evolve, it's just, what's the best way to get in contact with people? How do they want to be communicated? But then, again, I can still tell you, the value of that face-to-face holds true no matter what. So as long as we can utilize that, I think we'll still have some success.
For you on a personal level, you talked about how you goal your employees and how the different things they need to achieve each week. What does success look like for you?
Oh, geez. you're really putting me on the spot. So you're saying, what does success look like for me or my team, or where are we at with this, Brian? I want to make sure I'm answering.
No, I think
this
for
right
you,
way.
Like, what do you feel like at the end of the day? You go home and you're thinking, I really crushed it today, and my bosses are going to be proud of the job I did. I'm going to be in line for a promotion. Like, how do you measure yourself, and what does success look like for you personally?
Well, I would tell you the most important thing that at the end of the day, when I get home and I think back or reflect or whatever it may be, really, I do my reflection on the drive home. You know, I've got my radio rolling and I'm listening to the Working Sports podcast. I'm thinking about
what's going on.
But, you know, I'm kind of rolling through it. And for me, it's seeing our reps continue to learn and grow, right?
Yeah.
Seeing them, you know, like right now, my inside sales class, they started out about 2 months ago. Just seeing them evolve as individuals and where they've already been at this point, and knowing that they still got so much more time left to continue to grow, to me, that's a huge success, right? Obviously, our goal here in sales is to drive revenue. That's the number one arching goal. But seeing, you know, like we talked about, the 17 of the last 18 individuals take those next steps, seeing where this class is right now and the strides they've already made, that to me is a success. Just making those continued improvements, seeing people's careers grow, that's what's important to me.
Mike, this is awesome. I cannot thank you enough for all this great information you're sharing. I want to finish up with a quick lightning round, just a couple of things about totally off subject, have nothing to do with sales, or so I don't think. First question, let's say someone has 12 hours to spend in Cleveland. You're a native. They have a choice to make: the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or the Cleveland Museum of Art. Where should they go?
Oh, geez. I I'm going to go out on a limb and say, if you've got 12 hours, let's do both, because they're so unique, right? And I think you can probably do it in a quick 12 hours because they're close to each other in Cleveland. So okay. You can get there probably within about 10, 15 minutes there in drive time. So the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so unique. I mean, there's so many different artifacts there. I'll tell you what, I'm embarrassed to tell you I haven't been there probably in about 10 years because I take it for granted that it's in my backyard and I drive by it all the time. I do go to the art museum actually often, and I'm really like not a huge arts guy. But at the same time, when I go and there's certain exhibits, like I was there probably about a year ago and they were doing an Egyptian exhibit. Wow. I mean, just incredible stuff.
Yeah.
So they're very unique, obviously, but at the same time, 12 hours, let's do both and grab lunch in between.
That sounds good to me. I'll be on my way. How much crossover is there with the other sports teams in town? Do like the Cavs inside sales team go out for drinks with the Browns, or is that a no-no to fraternize with the competition? I'm always curious how that intermingling within a city sports scene works.
Yeah. So I think for us, we're really lucky that we're friends with all the teams in town. Whether it's the Cleveland Indians, the Cavaliers, the Cleveland Monsters. We have relationships with a lot of these people. Not only do our refs go and grab a drink or wing night or whatever it may be with some of the other inside sales reps, us as leadership, we'll get together at different things. So
that's cool.
It's really neat. Like, again, they're great people. We're really fortunate to work in Northeast Ohio with these teams because they're so well-loved. Cleveland is very, very passionate about its sports teams. So it kind of makes it contagious, and, you know, we all get to know each other, and I go to some Cavs or Indians games, or they come to Browns games, whatever it may be. So we do stay in good contact, and they're great people at those other organizations.
That's great. So on game day, where do you watch from?
Well, usually I get to watch the game when I get home because I DVR it, because we're working, Brian.
You
know what I mean? Like,
yep.
the way I look at it on game day is we've got 67,000 people coming over to our house, and we have to be good hosts, right?
Oh,
and it's
great.
Really, really important for people to understand getting into sports. You're not standing around watching play-by-play. Now, do you get to see some of the game? Sure. And do we still find that it's important, you know, for you to see introductions or things that are kind of playing out? Absolutely. Because at the end of the day, we work really hard to make sure First Energy Stadium is filled up on a weekly basis. But our game day is really focused on getting to know our fans, right? The people that are in our building.
That's
connecting
cool.
with them, helping them out, making sure that they're having the best time possible when coming out to the First Energy Stadium.
So the better movie, Draft Day with Kevin Costner playing the Browns GM, or The Express, a 2008 film about Ernie Davis, the first African-American to win the Heisman Trophy, who later went on to play for the Browns, which I've never seen, but is the only other movie about the Browns I could find. Which one do you prefer?
Fair. Well, here's where I'm at with it. So Ernie Davis and The Express, a very unique story. I'm a huge Cleveland Browns fan, because I grew up in Northeast Ohio, so I kind of like know all the little weird history things about the team. So I think it's a really good movie. I've definitely seen it. I'm going to lean on Draft Day. The reason why, some of my friends, so I started working for the Browns when they were filming Draft Day.
Okay.
And some of my friends actually here at the Browns are in the movie Draft Day. So it's really cool to see them play some different parts, you know, in a Kevin Costner film. Like,
that's great.
Pretty legit.
Yeah, it's totally legit. And you should like that. And I actually was very surprised by how much I liked that movie. I'm not embarrassed to say it. Last question. Cleveland is known for its Polish-influenced food. I'm a big fan of the pierogies, but I'm reading about this Polish boy sandwich that Cleveland is famous for. Oh, what's kind of the deal there? Can you explain it to us?
Yeah, so I'm going to really throw you for a curveball, and I'm like pro-Cleveland everything. I'm not crazy about it. It's good, but we've got some local corned beef places in town.
Better.
That I think just are, that's my, if you're coming to Cleveland, Brian, what we can do, we'll run over to a Rock Hall. The Rock Hall is right by First Energy Stadium. So we'll show you the stadium. Then we'll go grab some corned beef sandwiches at my friend's Carl's into the Barrister. And then we'll go over to the Art Museum.
This is going
to
happen.
I think the corned beef sandwich scene, that's what I really like.
Okay, this is going to happen because you've just sold me on it. And I want to go to a Browns game. So we're gonna make this happen. I'm going on a road trip this summer. This is great.
You let me know. We're in.
It sounds awesome. I want to see the Rock and Roll of Fame, catch a Browns game, get some corned beef. It sounds awesome. Mike, I cannot thank you enough for all the time you've spent with us. Some great advice in here. Thank you so much.
No, it was my pleasure, Brian. Hopefully I get to help some of the individuals out and look forward. If anybody has any questions, you know, I'm more than happy to answer anything that they might have. I'm on Twitter, so find me on there. More than happy to answer any questions.
Big thanks to Mike. He's absolutely one of my favorite guests to date. Extremely helpful guy. We talk every once in a while. He's just so willing to help and engage and share advice, and just a great overall dude. I'd suggest you connect with him on LinkedIn. Tell him you heard him on the Work and Sports podcast. I love all the info he shared on sales in the sports world. Such great information. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. Remember to subscribe to the podcast, share with a friend or 20, and give us a positive review wherever you listen. All right, everyone. Time to get back to work.